Hello, cloakers, and welcome to this new episode of Turn Cloaks. Before we dive into it, a little announcement that we have launched a new podcast on the Encounter Roleplay Network, which is called Tomes and Tentacles. It's a Call of Cthulhu 7th edition actual play podcast, and I'm playing on it. We've got a fantastic cast and crew. I don't actually GM this one, so if you want to see me in the action as a player, go over to iTunes, take a listen. If you love Turn Cloaks, you are going to absolutely love Tomes and Tentacles for its horror, its emotional, heart-wrenching moments, and sheer creepiness. So really recommend you guys check that out. And of course, the usual shout out to our sponsor, D&D Dice, who make these beautiful dice. I was actually just on their website, and they've got these beautiful Damascus steel dice, which are just incredible looking. If you're getting any dice for your own D&D sessions, highly recommend. Use that coupon code Encounter Roleplay. Support Turn Cloaks, support the show, and enjoyed today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn Cloaks, the Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition actual play podcast presented by Encounter Roleplay. My name is Will, I'm a D&D sex icon, and I'm back here today with episode 23 of Turn Cloaks as we return to this dread world of Penumbra, and a lot of information has just come out the party, a lot of events have just happened, things are really hotting up over here, literally, as well as in the story. Let's go around to cast and crew, let's figure out who we are and who we're playing, and let's start today with Tool School. How are you doing, Tool School?
Doing good. I am looking forward to this next episode to see where this goes. You know, we're moving through the night and hopefully into a new dawn, but yeah, it's probably a cloudy day. It might rain. Forecasted for rain. Probably.
The doom cast. Yep.
I am playing Alistair Crowe, who is our resident plague doctor, who is how we describe a cleric of the grave domain in this low magic world of Penumbra.
We also have Joseph with us today. Joseph, how are you doing?
Just dandy, ready as always for another episode of Turn Cloaks. I'll be playing Tam, who is the human ranger with his rabbit foot at his belt and his trusty companion Ari at his side.
And Josh.
I'm looking forward to this. My name is Josh. I will be playing Luna, who is he's a monk, and he's going into to do some great things. He's fireman monk today, and everything is going to go wonderfully well.
It's like Fireman Sam. Oh, incredible. That image in my mind now. Yes, amazing. We also have Sydney with us today. Sydney, how you doing?
I'm good. Very good.
Well, you two cut it out already.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm excited. I think we left off on a nice note.
I can take again if you want.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm sorry, I kind of shot you down there. I do
you
love
did,
you,
you're
I going promise.
I've been dang for 2 fucking years.
We can fix it in post.
Yeah, we'll fix that. We'll fix our relationship
we'll
in
fix
post.
Your relationship in post.
Getting a little chilly in here.
Oh my God, I'm Sydney. I'm playing Ari. She's a half-elf rogue. I'm excited.
More excited than you are? Okay.
Stop!
I'm kidding. So
let's
much.
Let's not get into this.
No, let's not. Let's instead get into the last episode of Turn Cloaks. And here to bring us a recap and to save me is Joseph. Yes, I should ask you the question, Joseph. What happened previously on Turn Cloaks?
Well, what happened was Donovar stumbled through our doorway, missing an arm, Sans' arm, and collapsed on the floor with a small child who Ari spent last episode talking with, learned some interesting things about where she was from. She was from apparently a compound of mages that was attacked by the plague hounds, we found out. Tam and Luna went to help fight the fire at formerly Jasper Wick's compound. Got there. Tam talked to Stony Tim and gained an audience with Jasper Wick, who is now very vulnerable and pretty much beaten. And Alistair spent... Well, Luna went around looking for Lucia, who we still do not know where she is. He looked through the children that escaped from the compound after the explosion, who were eventually ushered away to the temple, and Alistair talked with the priest, Father Elion, and is hopefully getting to a better place, starting to see the light as we continue ahead on this dark, dark path.
Incredible. And today we're going to pick things up with Luna. Luna, who went down into the blaze of the Barksdale boys' fire in search of Lucia. And now as you get down here, the fire is still hot. And while most of it has burnt away, the like propellant that was fueling the fire and making it burn harder and faster and hotter than it should be, it has burnt away and has been used up. There is still a lot of smoke down here and a lot of fire, so it's pretty hot. Going down here, you are going to get scorched, and you're going to come out just with so much soot on you. But the worst thing is the coughing from the smoke as Luna heads down and immediately just starts coughing, despite the rag over his mouth, which is helping him for certain. He sees up ahead the blasted open room that has been left bare by the force of the explosion, and several other rooms that have been revealed by the force of the explosion as the doors have just been completely blown off their hinges. Immediately, you see that you are in what was once a place for storing alcohol, kegs and of ale, the wine, presumably. You look into another, they have stacks upon stacks of boxes inside, which wasn't completely burnt all of it. You can see that in these boxes there was some kind of root or herb, which has seemingly gone up pretty damn well. You would presume this to be barb, the dangerous drug which is used in the alchemical formulation of the black vials. You also see into another room, which one other man is just coming out from, and he's kind of like coughing and spluttering, and he says, "That's the last of them," and heads back upstairs into this room from which he came. Is the site of where the children were being kept, it seems like.
Luna will like try to grab him before he goes, and sort of like struggling to breathe, staying as low as he can to avoid the worst of the smoke. He says, "My, there must be others. Have you found any that?"
He says, "They're upstairs."
Upstairs where?
She gestures back the way from which you've come, right? The hole from which you just come, and presumably meaning the 50 or so children that had been taken away by the priestess.
He not just says, and just sort of just pushes past him and continues trying to gaze around, see if he can find any sort of, like, he's looking for like collapsed bits of the ceiling that have come down, anything that could trap a small child.
Yeah. As you enter into the room, you see that it was home to bunk beds. It's basically bunk houses in here. There are quite a lot of them, enough to hold the children. The room is, you know, substantial. And you can see where the force of the explosion was most virulent, at the front, where the door was. And you can see lying there a burnt and in several pieces arm, which you assume to be Donovan's, as he was holding the door after hearing the commotion upstairs. And that blast area is like where the ground is scorched and the beds are completely like immolated, and all of the bedding has just been burnt to a crisp. Further down into the room, there are beds which are almost not burnt at all, which only started to get like flickers of the blaze coming towards them. So it was clear that the worst part of the explosion was, and the burning was, immediately as you step into the room. Lying on the floor, there are burnt children's toys, their bedding. There are some books which are completely burnt away and just, you know, burnt to a crisp, basically. There's still fires burning in here as well, mostly where you are. You can roll me a perception check as you're coming in here.
A 19.
On a 19, you take a look around the space. There are a few beds which have forms under them
which could very well be folks who did not escape, children who did not escape the blaze and the brunt of the explosion. There are only a few of them. Compared to the rest of the beds, it looked like you got almost all of the children out. It was just those closest to the door that did not survive. Do you notice that? You also notice that at the far end of the room there is a chest. As you open up the chest, as you head that way, you see that there are black gowns which are in here, in a child size. And I don't mean a ball gown. It's not like a dress. It looks quite formal. There are a lot of them, and they're clearly... some are boys, some are girls, but they are clearly in children's size. As you look at this, you can actually roll me a history check.
14.
14 is pretty good. You recognize these, somewhat burnt and crisp, but they were inside the chest, which took the worst of the fire. You recognize these to be traditional Penumbran funerary gowns. These are to be worn during the procession of a body through the streets, only ever of someone important, like a knight, a noble, an emperor.
I am going to grab up, I'll grab one, and then he's going to turn his attention to the probably unrecognizable forms of those cowering under the bed and begin checking them. It's probably futile, but he has to.
You can roll me a medicine check.
That's a 7.
You can barely make out much at all, but from the shape of the bodies, you're pretty sure they're boys.
Did any of them have any... I doubt it, but did any of them seem to have personal effects on them?
No. All of their
beds
are numbered as well, by the way.
Can I try and memorize the numbers of the ones that are under their beds, cowering? Just because if... Like, the way Lucia is... the way Luna is looking at this is... This might be sort of like a test place. So, they could be individual subjects that are on a bed and they might be important. So, can I just sort of like try and commit them to memory before I get out of here as to who I think might be dead?
As far as you can tell, it's the ones closest to the door. So, 1 and 2.
Okay. In which case, he seeing nothing else that he can do here, he's going to just get out of here as quickly as he can.
Yeah, they are numbered, sorry to be clear, they are numbered just from, like, one side of the room to the other, so it doesn't seem like there's any kind of pattern to them other than just going in order.
All right,
you come back out, and you spot Tam having a conversation with Stony Tim as you come back out of the blaze. They shake hands, and Tam goes inside Jasper Wick's office.
Luna looks up to him and says, What's going on?
So at this point, you probably come out of the hole and look back into the building itself to get an eye on them. Otherwise, the smoke would be too fierce. So Tam, you kind of turn back and you see just outside in the doorway, Luna has just walked in after you've shaken hands for the second time with Stony Tim.
I'm going to speak with Mr. Wick. He has property of mine that I need to get back.
Luna walks over every intention of going in with him.
Tam gives him a soft smile. As much as I value your companionship, I would prefer to do this alone.
He pauses and looks at sort of Stony Tim's men standing around.
Yeah, Stony Tim himself is watching.
Yeah, and says, well, I'll be right outside if you need me for anything.
He nods. Don't worry, I've promised not to hurt him any more than he already is.
Luna just raises an eye, like, looks genuinely taken aback, but doesn't question it, and sort of stands guard outside.
Tam turns and walks into the office.
It's an opulent room with a very nice desk, sitting at which, tied, gagged, and bound, is the form of Jasper Wick. He's clearly been bloodied. You've seen him from the fight. He's also been burned. Some of his flesh has been melted away. But he is conscious, despite one of his eyes taking a fair amount of damage from the blaze itself. You do walk into this room, and it is clearly of a higher quality and taste than any other of the compound that you've been into before. Jasper Wick is clearly a very wealthy man, and he likes to display that. He's got paintings on the wall. There are hunting scenes, as well as bears and deer that he must have hunted himself and placed up there. And he kind of looks up to you with his one good eye. He looks a little bit surprised to see you, though. Oh, you're not Tim.
No.
Timothy.
I am... No, I am Tam. Tamarin. And you have something of mine.
I remember you.
It seems you've failed to uphold the end of our agreement. I have to admit I didn't do a good job at the first part myself, but, well, I've met men who've done...
As our good friend Tim would say, we are equals, fucking peequals, mate.
That does sound an awful lot like him. Regardless, I've met men who have done worse things than you, but they had something that you didn't have. Reason. All I see in you is greed. Tell me, do you have a family?
In a way, yes.
You know a perverted sense of the word, then. And Tam reaches into a satchel at his side and brings out something that he almost forgot was there. It is the shards, kind of the splintered remains of the Plaguehound mask that he picked up after his battle in the forest. And he walks over to the desk. Now, like I said, you have something of mine. I'd like to know where it is.
What is it?
The dagger I gave you as collateral.
Hmm. Top drawer. Nods towards his desk.
Tam goes over and opens the top drawer to see if it's there.
Roll me a dexterity saving throw.
24. Nat 20.
Ooh. Wow. You perfectly dodge a dart loaded with... something green and venomous looking, and it just whistles past your face as it kind of shoots up at you from the drawer and embeds itself in the ceiling. Jasper Wick raises an eyebrow. Oops, forgot about that.
Tam looks up at the dart and then down at the mask, which he has since concealed from Jasper Wick. He hasn't let him completely see it yet. The inside of it, I imagine, is just riddled with the dried blood and flesh of the Plaguehounds. He walks over to Jasper and grabs a fistful of his hair and takes the mask and jams it onto his face.
He screams out in agony with an unnatural shriek. It is not quite human. And the pain, clearly, which he is experiencing is something beyond that which someone should sustain. And the shard sticks into his forehead where you've pushed it into the hair and bites itself into his skin, latching itself on. And it's actually moved in just underneath that first layer of skin. And like a parasite moving its way underneath someone's skin, it begins to move towards his brain. What are you doing to me?
I'm making you what you sought so desperately to bring to this world. Those black vials spread this. Now you have become it. I'll give you one final chance to tell me where my dagger is, and maybe I can help you.
He, like, recovers from the sheer panic and pain and says, "All right, third draw. I'll open it." And he kind of gestures towards his, you know, his hands. He can still move his hands around.
Tam releases his hair and lets him walk over to the drawer.
The shard of the mask is still directly in his temple underneath that first layer of skin. And he opens up the drawer, and your dagger is indeed there.
Tam takes it and sticks it in his boot, where he feels it rightfully belongs. Turns to Wick and says, "Seems our agreement is now complete. I believe Stony Tim has something in mind for you. Farewell." Turns and leaves the room.
All right. He lets you go with a little smile playing on his lips. Let's cut over to the other half of our party. So, Alistair and Ori. Ori, the little girl, 37, has headed to bed. She has passed out after exhaustion. And you can tell that it's going to be a long sleep for her, finally in a bed which isn't numbered after her name. And so she falls asleep for once fairly peacefully, knowing that she is protected. Father Elyon has left, and Alistair and the unconscious form of Donovar are the only ones in the house right now.
Ari would probably stay in the room with her for a long time, just out of concern, out of fear. But after a while, Ari starts sort of nodding off in the chair that she's in and sort of like keeps jumping and waking herself up, and realizes that she's way too exhausted to just keep watch here. So she'll get up and close the door very, very quietly behind her, and go downstairs with the intent to check on Donovar and see how he's doing.
He's beginning to heal somewhat. He's not conscious yet, but he is breathing more regularly.
Mm-hmm. She'll go to the kitchen to get herself a drink and probably put a glass of water or something next to Donovar as well. She goes to lay it down, like, on his right side, and then remembers he's not going to be able to grab it that way. Walks around the body, puts it on the next, and just stands there for a little bit and looks at him. And so Alistair is still downstairs, or he's gone upstairs now? Upstairs.
I'm upstairs. Mm-hmm. Went up to my room.
She goes and just very, very lightly puts her hand on Donovar's and just says... Ari just very lightly puts her hand over Donovar's hand and just says very quietly, "Thank you for everything." And goes back upstairs. And she stops in front of Alistair's door and stares at it for a little and almost reaches for the doorknob and then clenches her hand in a fist and goes back to her own room.
So... unless, Alistair, you want to do anything.
Why, yes. Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Is Ari taking a long rest?
Yes.
Two things. Before going to sleep, Alistair has been searching through his bag. He was searching before, he's searching again. Will, is there barb in Alistair's bag?
Roll me a... medicine check.
It's an 8.
There's a lot of old herbs in there that have been there for a long time. It would be difficult to identify them at this point. Perhaps. Also, from what you know of barb, it comes in many different forms, many different root types, so it's almost like a genus of plant rather than one plant, right? You know, one root or whatever. So... it's possible that you could distill similar extracts from different plants. So if you're asking me, is there the exact form of barb that you've seen Dermish use, then no. But is it possible that there are extracts of barb or other plants that you use that could have traces of barb in them? It's possible.
After searching his bag, he goes into his four-hour reverie.
Okay. Luna and Tam, you guys are headed straight back?
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the ruckus around the blaze has died down. Unless you wanted to talk to Sony Timidor, you can head right back.
No, but on the way back, Luna does pause for a moment and takes Tam, sort of, like, has him stop. And he, it looks like he's, like, basically it looks like his robes are more torn and tattered. And he sort of, like, he's wrapped them around him a little bit more, but then he pulls his arm away from his chest, and you realize that there's extra black cloth, and it's slightly nicer black cloth, though still charred, than his tattered old robes, and he holds it out to Tam. I found this down there. It was one of many.
What is this?
My guess would it would be funeral garb. The sort of thing you wear to show your respects to the dead, whether you are attending the funeral itself or whether you are simply lining the streets. There was one for all of them.
These were meant for the children? For the funeral of the Emperor?
So it would seem.
Tam is... he recognizes kind of the simple plainness of this. It makes sense to him that people would pay respect to the death of the Emperor, but he's not sure why children who are kept as slaves would, or as simply as supply, would be honored with this. Why is...
It is true that there are nightly vigils held in Penumbra. And specifically in Ostwald, the former city where the Emperor once lived, and the kind of homeland of everything that is the Empire, right? You know, there are candles that are lit, there are, you know, there's blood drawn on people's doors, there are nightly processions of people who will, you know, be screaming about the end of times before the knights will clear them out, or those that will be praying to the Emperor to come back, or praying to the stars that will bring the Emperor back. So there is certainly, you know, this is prime time for funerals in Penumbra. This is the most earth-shattering event that could happen, and the most important event. So a lot of people will be dressed in black around Ostwald at this time to show their respects.
Why would they need clothes that would be seen as respectful by other people in the community? If they spent their entire lives being hidden away, what would be the point? Unless they were not going to be hidden away for this.
They might be planning something. If there are more captive children, they're going to be out during the funeral.
But it seems like an awful risk to take. I mean, what if someone were to find them? To recognize them in the streets? I know it's unlikely, but why take that chance? Unless that there wasn't going to be any time to do anything about it afterwards.
You're right, this seems like more than just ceremony or paying their respects. They've got something planned for the night of the funeral.
Well, we need to find out how the children are going to be involved. We should go and get back. Before we return, he's your brother, Tam. I didn't find Lucia in there, but I might have done. I understand that there are some things we can't foresee, but the way he spoke... I'm not sure I'm ready to talk to him right now. And I think that's for everyone's interest. You need to speak to him. And you need to make him listen.
Tam nods. And gives Luna a reassuring look. And smiles before heading off back to the safe house.
You guys return. And it hasn't been 4 hours, so you'll probably find Alistair in Reverie.
Lunan will just go straight over to Donovan, and he'll remain there and he'll sort of mop at his brow. It's like the guy must be burning a fever or something. So yeah, he'll just stay by his side, but he makes no attempt to go upstairs.
Tam walks over with him just to check on Donovar. Is Alistair sitting at the table during this meditation, or he's...
He's up in his room, door closed, in Reverie.
Okay. So Tam walks over to the table, and we'll catch sight of the handkerchief laid with the one leaf kind of obscured from... folded so that it's out of view of the rest of them. And he frowns and takes it and just kind of looks up the stairs before heading up, pausing outside of Alistair's door, saying a very brief prayer, and then walking to his room and going to bed.
Alistair.
So after his 4 hours, I assume the house is quiet. Alistair takes off his armor so that he can be as quiet as possible. And he goes to where he believes the last time he saw the plague vial was, which was in Ori's room, to see if he can get it.
So last time... We heard Ori had the black fire with her after taking it from Luna.
Yeah, that wouldn't be something that she would constantly carry around with her out of just worry that she would lose it or worry she would be caught with it. So it would probably, if there's a drawer or a chest or a nightstand or something like that, it would be somewhere close within reach, but hidden from where she is.
All right. Then, Alistair, you can roll me a stealth check. Presumably you have an idea about where it is.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'm trying to go as slowly and carefully, knowing that she's asleep, hoping to not make enough noise to disturb her rest. That's a 7.
When you're asleep, passive perception, we'll pull the passive at a -5 because you're asleep.
It's exactly that. So, there's a tie.
Yep. So... I just want to Ori. Ori, like, seeing as you guys both succeeded, well, you both kind of, like, equaled it out, there's no real winner. Ori, you, like, kind of crack open an eye, and you kind of see that you watch as Alistair takes the black vial from your hiding place. Yeah, you're pretty sleepy whilst this is happening. Whether or not you want to call him out on it in that moment,
yeah. So has Alistair noticed that she noticed him?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. With the equal, I'm fine if he doesn't.
Then no.
Maybe it's because she was a little bit restless, worried about the girl sleeping in the other room. She's just not as deep in sleep as she normally is. And so with, like, a little crack of the door, a little light peeking through, it, like, wakes her up because she's thinking it's going to be the girl needing help or something. And when she sort of sees that it's Alistair and he comes over to the... with the mask on, yeah. When she sees the crow mask, she doesn't do anything. And then when he comes over... to the nightstand and opens the little drawer, and she hears the vial sort of roll down the drawer. She just instinctively shoots her hand out and grabs his wrist as hard as she can, and almost doesn't even open her eyes and just says, "What are you doing?"
"I wanted to examine it. He said there was a cure. Your doctor. If it can be found, if one person can find it, so can another."
She sort of sits up and adjusts her eyes and blinks a little bit, trying to see him, and says, "You think you can do it?"
I am a crow, after all.
You see her kind of frown a little bit. She says, right. The White Crow. Then, far be it from me to prevent you from doing your work.
Yes. You should get your rest. You have an appointment to keep.
I don't intend to break it. As she finally lets go of her white-knuckled grip on his wrist and says, good luck, White Crow.
He just closes the doors and walks away. When he gets back to his room, he goes over to the small table that is there, takes out a fairly sizable container, pulls out Mercy, opens up his artery, and drains his own blood into it, watching it turn from red to inky black as he fills up as much of it as he dares, and begins one by one taking all the different extracts, adding them in, pinch of salt, and trying to make one that matches the plague vial.
It's going to be a long process for Alistair, and certainly by the time that he realizes everyone else is waking up and the sun has risen, he doesn't find himself altogether too much closer to his goal, but he certainly has begun. As the rest of you guys wake up and head downstairs for breakfast, you also realize that Donovar is no longer on the table. He's moved to one of the couches, and he's lying down in it with his eyes closed. They kind of flicker open as people start heading downstairs in the morning, and after this long night, it seems as though he is conscious once again. So we'll start with the group if you headed down there.
Luna's already down there, having sort of sort of fallen asleep in a chair looking after him. He forces a smile as the others come down and just points to their sleeping friend who's stirring now. He lives.
Ari will be extremely excited and walk over, like, almost skipping to the couch, and she's like, hey, you!
Donovar looks up at you with these, like, completely bloodshot eyes where a lot of his eyelids have been burnt off, and, you know, his eyelashes are gone, and his eyebrows are gone, and almost all his hair's gone, and his arm's gone, and his voice is pretty raspy. And he says, Yeah. It's good to see you. As he, you know, tries talking for the first time and just ends up coughing and spluttering, he reaches for like a glass of water that he left out for him.
Yeah, Ari will hold his head up and help him get some of it. And she's like, if you need anything at all, just make some sort of noise and we can come get it. I don't want you to strain yourself at all, and we're going to take care of you.
He had instinctively gone to reach with his right arm. He saw like his body move in that way, and then he kind of sighed and takes it with the left as he brings it. It's pretty weak strength, even though his arms are pretty bulky. He kind of sits back in the chair as he drinks. He says, food.
Yes, of course. Don't worry. I'll go get it. And yeah, she'll go up to the kitchen.
He stays in an almost paralyzed state, you know, almost pretty falls back asleep again, and then you bring back food and he starts to gulp it down using his left arm to, which is, you know, not practiced in any way, so you can tell he's clearly having difficulty doing it.
Tim just walks over and sits down next to him on the couch. It's good to see that you're alive, my friend.
He nods, and he says, Daisy.
Tam smiles and says, she's all right. We went and checked on her not too long ago. She's been keeping herself well fed.
He cracks a toothless grin. It's to the point where like, even his gums have been, like, ashened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You've got another friend upstairs too, and she's doing very well.
He looks happy at that, and smiles again.
The others?
Taken to the temple. They'll be safe there.
From what I could tell, only two of them didn't make it. Not as bad as we first feared.
He slowly kind of manages to nod again. There's really not much to Donovar at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's I'm gonna go check on I'll be right back. And Ari goes upstairs to go into the room of the little girl.
37 isn't there. She's right behind you. Hey! Sorry, sometimes I disappear.
Ari, the second she opened the door and saw that she wasn't in the bed, like, tears started welling in her eyes and she just, like, froze. So the second she heard that, hey, she was like,
God. I scared you.
No. Yes. Oh, God. And she turns around and just, like, grabs her and hugs her so tight.
Yes. And then she disappears.
Stop doing that!
I can't help it. Sometimes it happens.
Oh, we're gonna have to learn how to fix that.
I'm getting tired.
Oh, is Donnie awake?
He is, but he's very, very weak, so no jumping on him.
Can we see the others?
Soon. Let's go get some food and maybe change and then we can.
She jumps downstairs and is very excited. She squeals when she sees Donovar. And she does jump on him. He does look happy as well. He kind of smiles slowly and hugs her. She's like, Donnie, Donnie, Donnie! And he kind of smiles at her and says,
safe.
And she smiles and plants a big kiss on his forehead. And she's like, that's right, I am. And the others are as well. And he just kind of smiles. And he seems to lose focus. He seems to be losing focus a lot. And he's also not just the burns as well, right? It's the acid burns as well that are on him from Alistair's, you know, somewhat haphazard healing. And she looks at him and she's kind of only realized now what he looks like as she comes back after her initial excitement. And 37, she begins to cry. She's like, oh no, he's not any better.
Ari immediately goes to comfort her and is like, he's going to be. It takes a lot of time to heal. And he's only had a couple hours.
Is he okay? Is he going to be okay?
He's going to be fine.
Donovar says simply,
no.
Tim gives him a cautioned look. What do you mean? What did they do to you?
Luna just sort of like gives Tam a look, sort of gestures to the guy's condition. It's just, I think that might have been the damage from the explosion. There's sort of awkwardly, like not sure how to say this without saying it in front of the kid, and just says, the crow did everything he could.
37 says, but he's going to get better, right? Everything will be better again, and his face and everything.
Things are going to get better, darling, and today we're going to go see your friends.
Okay.
Are you excited?
She nods eagerly, though. She looks back at Donovar, you know, kind of longingly.
Ari keeps trying to tell her things to divert her attention, just like, you know, we're going to go and it's going to be so fun and they're free and we can eat whatever you want. Like just little things like that to try and keep her attention on the excitement.
She's somewhat distracted, definitely.
Why don't you get her cleaned up and ready to go see her friends in the temple? Well, look after... Look after Donovan.
Right. Right. And she'll take her back upstairs and get any remaining soot that was still on her off and anything like that.
Yeah. She's happily chatting away up there with you, and she's like, I can't wait to see 26. You know, Donnie, he used to do... when we were playing and there weren't guards, he would say, bounce, bounce. And he would bounce us on his knee.
Oh, that sounds so fun. Well, I'm sure we could do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. And then sometimes he'd say, horse. He's really funny.
Yeah, he is, and he's a very nice man, and he cares about you.
We had to... I think there's something wrong with his head, though.
What do you mean?
He doesn't remember anything. You know, he's really forgetful. Ever since we had to pull those nails out of his head.
Like... The... What?
When he came in. He had these big, big nails in his head, and we had to pull them out, and... Well, I think it must have hurt his head really bad.
Ari, like, swallows, and she said, well, that was very nice of you to help him.
Yeah, I know. He did the same for us, so.
Mm-hmm.
While they're upstairs, Luna sort of turns to Donovan, sort of takes his only hand carefully, and says, Donovan, what happened to you? I know it's painful, but we need to know, after they took you, what happened?
He says, very slowly and laboriously, as he tries to get the kind of breath into his lungs,
where were you?
And that's where we're going to end tonight's episode of Town Cloaks. Oh, man, oh man. Dear, oh dear. Well, my friends, thank you so much for listening to tonight's episode of Turn Cloaks. We're all feeling pretty shitty here again after having a nice moment. But let's go into Custom Crew. We enjoy ourselves. Where can we find you guys online? Of course, we're going to read out one of your wonderful 5-star reviews here. And of course, follow us at Turn Cloaks Pod on Twitter to keep up with all of our shenanigans, our theories, our wildest conspiracies. Let's go to Joseph, first of all. Joseph, what do you think, my friend?
Well, it's certainly a very interesting episode. Lots of new things developing, as per usual. This thing with Donovar is just so off-putting. I'm interested to see what happens with it, and we still have some stuff to talk about between characters as well. So it's interesting to see where we go from here. But I'm Joseph. You can find me on Twitter at JosephIsNotFast. Thank you guys for listening.
And Josh.
Yeah, that was hard. That was hard to hear from someone. I mean, he's done so much for us. At the end of the day, we'd be absolutely screwed without him. And he's paid for it, for helping us, which is horrible. So, I'm Encounter Josh. You can find me on Encounter Roleplay, doing Encounter Roleplay things and stuff. So,
Tall School.
Yeah. Alistair fitting into all of this as well. He's in this weird, dark place where...
It's called Penumbra.
Yeah. It's called Penumbra. Yeah. He's still kind of locked up in his own head. I mean, and we'll have to see how this all plays out. Certainly an interesting scene getting caught. But dice, gotta love them. I am Tall Squall. You can find me all over social media at Tall Squall. If you go to my Twitter, you'll find links to all the other things that I do, including playing on Encounter Roleplay on Tuesday nights in the Long March.
And Sydney.
Yes. That was not really what I expected from this episode, but I still think it was a really good one. I'm ready to get into some other stuff, though. I'm really excited. I'm Sydney, and you can find me pretty much everywhere, Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, all those things, at Sydneyak, and I'm also the Dungeon Master for WonderQuest, which you can follow on Twitter at WonderQuestPod.
Oh, hey, I have some good news for you guys. You guys now level up to level 4.
Oh, thank fuck. Thank you.
Congratulations.
That's good.
Just a little bit of heartbreak. Tipped you over the edge there with Donovan. Awesome. So next time you guys will be super awesome and ready for your funeral. or the Emperor's funeral. Which one was it? I don't remember. Oh, also, if you haven't checked out our Patreon, go ahead, check it out. Bunch of cool exclusives you can get over there, and you can support the show. Patreon.com/Turncloaks. There'll be a link down below. And you guys will be able to get exclusive episodes of Cloakcast, which is our bonus episodes series of Turncloaks, in which we talk conspiracies, theories, emotions, our feelings, and basically decompress after the end of a group of sessions. So hopefully you guys want to check that out, support the show, keep us running, and let's read out one of those wonderful 5-star reviews that we oh so adore. This one is from Solbog. Let me find it. Solbog writes, "Let me use more stars. Let me use more stars, damn it," he says. "Dark fantasy isn't something commonly done, much less as a real play podcast. Instead of just being the best in a dark fantasy group, Turncloaks is one of the best produced live play podcasts I've ever come across." Thanks so much, Solbog. We appreciate it, my friend.
Wow.
And that is high praise indeed, my friend. High praise indeed.
Thank you.
We hope to keep you listening, and hope to see you guys next week in our next episode here. Oh, boy. It's heating up. Level 4. Let's go, baby. Until next time, try not to throw too many net ones. We're going to be a laughing when you do. Good night.